welcome to the show, Karen Lister.
Dave Goals. Interesting. Sorry. Thank you. Hi.
Karen Lister from Yumi Real Estate. How are you, love? We were just complaining about the weather.
It's chilly. And I was whinging about the heat on Friday. It was so hot.
Up here, was it?
It was really, really hot. For here? Yeah, Friday it was. Trust me, had the whippersnipper out and the mower and
all the fun stuff.
It wasn't fun.
You should have waited for today.
I should have.
No, you can't do it in the
rain. You can't do it in the rain. And Monday morning in real estate, that's way too busy.
Wait, why is it way too busy on a Monday?
Oh, well, you've had your opens on Saturday and Sunday or whatever, and you follow everybody up, and hopefully busy people put offers on the table and organise pest and buildings and all that stuff.
All the stuff.
Yeah, all the things, you know.
Talk to us about that stuff, Catherine, because you're going to run a bit of a segment today, aren't you, between Karen and Rob about the roles.
Who's who in the zoo when buying a property.
Yeah, so it should be fun. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, yeah, because lots of times, you know, people go, oh, can't you do that? And I go, no, you've got to go and see the real estate agent for that. So people just don't understand what each person's role is.
Well, I was at the gym this morning and I noticed a vendor rang because I went to my phone. And so I checked my messages again because it's Monday morning. And he had this quite long-winded message, and you're exactly right. It was I actually texted him and said, look, I'll ring you in half an hour. But it wasn't for me. It was for it was all conveyancer stuff.
Mm.
And he had – when I called him and I said, did you mean to put that – message for me? And he very quickly realized it was not stuff that I was going to be able to get done for him. It was a conveyancer role. So you're right, people do get confused, and I suppose there's so much that goes on. It's, well, what step do I do next, and what do I do next, and what comes
and
after
I think
that
the thing that what I find is that most people only buy and sell maybe what, five times as a whole, maybe in their lifetime. Whereas the likes of all of us that are doing it all day, every day, it's our job. So we do it five times a week. It's really important that we remember that kind of thing that they don't, isn't it?
Yeah. I just got off the phone. We've got a really wonderful property in Millthorpe, and there's somebody who, you know, is just sort of looking at what they'd need to do. And they would have, you know, one of the first questions I always ask is, do you have to sell to be able to buy? And they do, but could probably exchange without, like, and then, you know, stretch out settlement because they've got enough equity in their house to be able to do that. But, you know, she sort of said, okay, well, how does that work? And you do walk them through it. But the flip side of that is you frequently get people go, yeah, I know how it works.
Mm.
And, of course, it's not until they get into that process that they realise that there are a lot more steps involved, and maybe they didn't.
Maybe mum and dad or the neighbour that educated them along the way doesn't know everything.
Google's got the answer to everything. But you just used two words that maybe people wouldn't even understand. So, you know, what is exchange and what is settlement?
Mm,
you know, because lots of them go, oh, you know, I've paid my deposit. And I go, well, hopefully not, because we haven't done pest
exactly.
and build. And they go, no, I paid something.
Mm. Or they say, you know, they say to me they want to exchange with a cooling off, and then they want to get all the stuff done
first.
As in the pest and building and all the rest of it first, which defeats the whole purpose. I suppose the easiest way to answer your question with exchange versus settlement, exchange is when you actually enter into that contract, when it's an unconditional exchange. You know you've got a purchase, the vendor knows they have a sale, and you've put down your deposit and it's a legally binding contract. Pull out and you lose your 10%. And so that's really when all the heavy work's done, isn't it? And then settlement, of course, is the day you actually pick up your keys and pull the truck up the drive.
I think there's a lot of that, that heavy work that you just mentioned there that sort of happens in that 10-day cooling
that first
off, doesn't it? Because you actually
– five.
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 Oh, well, I
who gives
a 10? 10. Well, five.
And we push back for five.
And I push forward for 10.
Yeah.
Depending on the
– it depends who it is.
Yeah. Oh, well, it also depends, like, if the property's been on the market for a long time. and particularly at the moment to try and get Pest and Building this close to Christmas.
I waited a week and a half to get a Pest and Building recently. That's unheard of. Unheard of. Crazy.
That is crazy given that the market's kind of, you know, slowed down a little bit.
Yeah, well, a certain Pest and Building person was on holiday, so it loaded up.
Well, couldn't they get someone else?
Well, it loaded the other person up though. But yeah, I don't know. It was. I've never known it to be like that.
I've known valuations to blow out like that.
Well, and talking about the 5 day versus 10, I mean, I always push for 5 to start with just so that there's that sense of urgency because we do get a lot of mortgage brokers saying, we need 10, we need 10.
We don't like stress.
We like ours to be at the top of the pile rather than the bottom of the pile.
No, we like to actually come in on 5 and be ready and look really good that we're organised ahead of time.
Well, that might be the way you operate, but and look, of course, you'd be very unreasonable not to grant an extension, you know, and I always preempt that with a vendor. Yeah.
5 days is nothing in today's world. I mean, it goes by.
It does, but it can be done. It can certainly be done. Yeah. So
well, depending if the bank can, I mean, on valuations as well, because we've had one where the bank has actually sent in a second valuation.
Oh, really? That would suggest that someone's paying maybe the price that they would have paid 12 months ago, perhaps.
Well, yeah, and they then had to find a shortfall because the bank wouldn't lend them. So there was a whole – and that's the other thing. You're right. People sometimes are – you know, banks aren't coming in at the same value as what people are thinking.
Banks pulled in quite some time ago. I was reading a report this morning, from the weekend results, and auction clearance rates in Sydney are the lowest they've been since 2012, and they're really low, you know. And they were saying that very thing.
The weekend, 61, 62.
What was that? Sorry,
the auction clearance rates.
I think they were just below 60, and you know, it depends which report you're reading, but they were around that. And yeah, the general word was that vendors are going to have to relook at their expectations, you know, they will. You'll see a lot of that happening.
And that's the thing. What's the difference between buying at auction and buying
with
out
a
of 5 day
cooling off?
No one buys out of a window. What are you talking about? Well, obviously, buying at auction, you're exchanging unconditionally on the spot. So you would want to have done your homework.
So all those things pre-getting that you would there. Do in that. In a cooling off period that you don't get granted in an auction period, you're done. Still have to have done.
Yep.
And that's where valuations are coming back at a completely different to what people's expectations are.
And that's also a lot of cost to the client, isn't there? Because they have to do that due diligence themselves, and you could have 10 bidders on the day. So
yeah, for sure.
You have to pay for valuation, you have to pay for Pest and Building, you have to pay for a solicitor to look over a contract. You've actually got to invest a little bit more money into that kind of purchase up front. So you want to be sure that so it's not like you can just rock up at auction and think, oh, that's going cheap, let's throw our, you know, put our hand up and put a bid
no,
in.
Those days are long
those
gone.
Those days are long gone, that's right. I mean, you know, years ago, well, how many years ago did they change the rules? Well, it's probably
10
now, where, yeah, you had to register to bid. And, yes, you can register on the spot, but yeah, and I suppose more and more, particularly in a changing market, you have to watch that your emotions don't run away with you where you're paying more than what it's been recommended to pay by your valuer or whoever. Yeah, but that's the big difference with auction.
And the other thing people are getting, what I'm finding a bit antsy or concerned about, is identifying themselves.
Oh.
Yeah, so
at the auction.
Well, even just in purchasing. So even for yourself, like, you'd need to cite ID, who they are, you know, because we now live in a world where all of that is now reported.
Yeah, look, it's even like signing into an open house. People, I don't know whether it's a distrust or they know that some agents are going to hound them or, you know, but by law, we need to be registering people that come into a house. We just do, you know, and it's not really a lot to expect to take someone's name and phone number. You know, of course we're going to follow you up. But, you know, we're not going to hound you But if it was your house, you'd want to know who was walking through it. And, yeah, so there's this general distrust in some areas.
People don't necessarily understand that when they're at that very initial stages, when they've put an offer in and they're signing a contract, that actually morphs into the legal legal document, because we see it all the time where middle names are missing off contracts, or we've got one that was that we're dealing with at the moment off the plan. So they purchased it 18 months ago, and this particular fella has just first name, surname on his license. That's what we've always done business with. But these changes that you're referring to, Catherine, have meant that he's had to go and get citizenship when he was born here. But when his mother, he must have come under his mother's citizen. Anyway, he's now got four names. And we've worked with the clients and we've got it all sorted from the bank end. But when we went back to the solicitor, and the solicitor said to us, and you might want to make a comment on that, is that he was going to have to pay stamp duty. And I'm like, well, it's the same person. It's not, we haven't changed the person, but they put one extra name on. And then we went back and we said, no, it's his legal name. And the legal person said, but that's what he wanted. Well, we don't care.
Well, look, honestly, on the front page, I mean, the transfer is the more important thing than the front page of the contract, because it's the transfer that you lodge to transfer it into their name.
But doesn't it have to be the same as the contract?
Oh, look, when you're stamp, as long as I've ID'd them correctly and I've kept those IDs, then that's okay. It's only if you're changing an entire entity on the front that causes... But all you do is what we call in law is rescind the contract, reissue it in the correct name. And, I mean, most vendors would be more than happy to do that because, you know, they've already got their money and we're close to settlement.
Except in this case it was Stockland and it's off the plan, so he's actually made some good money. So in the event that they rescind it, I guess there's an opportunity the clients can lose out considerably.
Yeah, but you'd do it by way of, you know, an agreement between the legal firms. You know, it's not that unusual that front pages, particularly when we're doing Superfund matters, because the Superfund, you know, they might set up a different entity for this property.
Yeah, the Bear Trust.
Yeah, and you've got to put the right name, otherwise you're buying it yourself.
That's a headache. Yeah.
But, yeah, and, you know, that's also where we rely a lot on real estate agents feeding us the correct details.
But do you find that most agents, like if they're going to exchange it themselves, do you find they actually fill out the forms correctly and follow the process correctly and do what they're supposed to be doing? Do you find that they do?
Very few. A lot of them just want people signed. What we dislike is when we're working with a real estate agent who won't work with us, with the client, because sometimes the client gets onto a wrong page and then they start ringing everybody in the you know, the group. So it will be the real estate agent, the mortgage broker, the bank, us. And we just need sometimes for them all to be on the one page.
Yeah.
But a lot of times when they've been exchanged, you know, the wrong amounts are filled out. You know, they haven't negotiated the changes that need to be done. Special conditions sometimes that need to be added. So yeah, we find that then we're making within those 5 days before cooling off has ended lots of changes, because you know, sometimes our clients want particular things, or we find contracts without additional clauses that really need to be there.
But to a certain extent, that's what your 5 days is for those sorts of things too, like. As an agent, yes, I tend to still fill out an REI sales advice to go with that, even though I've exchanged it. But big things, like if I know that, you know, we want to cut the settlement days back because we want to get in before Christmas, for example, those sorts of things would be in. But generally, you're still going to find that conveyancers or solicitors will want certain clauses in or out or whatever. But, yeah.
And also the holding of the deposit, sometimes we find it difficult to get information about how much.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it in writing.
That seems a bit bizarre. Should be a fairly simple thing. Because they, the client A, should have a receipt, number one, shouldn't they?
Yep, absolutely. Yeah.
An early release of the deposit that causes us also a bit of, angst.
How often
times.
Does that actually get approved and honoured if you've paid the 10% deposit in cash, you've paid it to the agent, sits in trust, but that's, say, for the sale of your house, so your agent has received the deposit on your behalf in their trust, but then I'm going to buy something and I actually need access. Mm. How often does that type of thing happen and how often does it get approved?
Well, it happens quite regularly.
Yeah, look, there's some solicitors who point blank just will not do it, whereas there's others.
Is there a risk? I mean, obviously there's a risk, but how great's the risk?
Well, I mean, at that point, the 10% is theirs.
It's not theirs. Yeah, exactly. It's no longer the purchaser's money. It technically is the vendor's money. And it's not as if it's going in their wallet to go shopping. Mm. You know, it can only go from trust account to trust account. So it's really just a paper trail. As an agent, there is no way I will release that deposit. Like, even if I've had a phone call to say, Barry Smith's getting, we're going to release this deposit. We want you to draw a check or transfer it or whatever. Until I've got that in writing, there is no way I will release it. But it does happen. It doesn't happen that often, though. I find it doesn't happen that often.
Yeah. I find that most people tend to exchange, particularly when they're in those domino buying and selling, they exchange using a deposit bond.
Yes. Yeah, deposit bonds are used more and more.
Yep.
The only reason I don't – I mean, look, obviously people do need to use deposit bonds at times, but as an agent you can – I waited like a week and a half to be paid recently because it was a check was raised from the
Deposit Power or something,
and then it was put in the post, and then it was and then it went missing, and then that one had to get cancelled. Oh, on
gosh,
and on.
I've never experienced any of that.
Yeah, yeah, but generally, a lot of people use deposit bonds, don't they?
Yeah, it's
is it safer than using cash?
Is it safer? Did
yeah,
you say?
Yeah. So does it protect anybody in the equation?
I don't think it makes any difference, really.
No.
You're not getting your money back either way.
No, exactly.
It's just an avenue to which if you don't have it, then you can...
Yeah, yeah. Or if you might have it, but you're pulling it out of a, fixed-term deposit and you're not going to have it within those 5 working days or whatever.
Yeah, or if your money's tied up in your equity in your home or you've got parents that are helping you out with deposit. There's a number of reasons why you...
It gives people an alternative. I mean, you pay for them, don't you? But it's not big bucks.
1.3% of the bond amount.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's not huge. It's generally under about $1,000, depending on
if you're buying properties.
The $3 million Bondi property might cost you a bit more. But
what, you can get one for $3 million at Bondi?
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. I don't know that market very well at all.
Just a one bedroom and an unrenovated bathroom.
I think that's a dog kennel, isn't it?
A studio maybe.
Yeah.
All right, fantastic, ladies. Well, we might wrap that up and go to some music. But, Karen, if you want to hang around, we're going to continue this conversation about how all the parties work together. So up to you if you've got somewhere else you need to be.
She doesn't have anywhere. She's gone to the gym.
She's been to the gym already. All right, so our next track up is Just Keep Walking by INXS, and then we'll come back with and introduce